Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles!
All right, sing it loud and sing it proud. The Beatles at the Beach is here for you. Facebook.com/TheBeatlesAtTheBeach. We are going to be joined in studio in a minute by Susan Chomsky. She wrote, and I mean, this book, I love the cover. It's called The Maharishi and Me. I like saying it like that. Seeking Enlightenment with the Beatles Guru. So we're going to talk to her about that. She's going to be here for both hours. She has some songs we're going to play. We're going to play some music. We're going to talk. We're going to laugh. I'm going to ask her questions. It's going to be a lot of fun. You can find us on Facebook, on Instagram, at The Beatles at the Beach. Go look it up. While we get things rolling and set up here, we're going to play some music for you. How about that? Little George Harrison, Got My Mind Set on You. I'm going to start that off on Cloud 9.
I got my mind set on you. I got my mind set on you.
I'm playing a little music for you this morning. Facebook.com/TheBeatlesAtTheBeach and on Instagram at The Beatles at the Beach. Go give us a like and a follow. We'll love you for it. And we have in the studio, she just arrived, Susan Chomsky. Thank you for coming in so much. It's amazing to meet an author that wrote so many books about, well, about meditation. And not only did that, but you also studied under the same man that influenced these boys here.
Yeah. I'm so glad to be here with you today, Sammy.
Well, thanks for coming in. And we're going to talk about your book. We're going to talk about your studying. And I'm sure he had a big influence on you as well, being the Maharishi.
Absolutely.
As he was a huge influence on these four, mm-hmm. the Mop Tops, and the transformation that they went from being that, you know, that the early band of the Beatles to what they become for like Pepper and Revolver and the later albums, I imagine it had a lot to do with him.
It did.
Yeah.
It had a lot to do with Maharishi. Yeah, he influenced them greatly.
Well, we're going to talk about that. What got you into meditation?
Well, it was the 60s. I was a hippie. I was living in the San Francisco Bay Area. I was a flower child.
Mm.
And probably you don't know that those of us who were flower children, we were really very serious about learning about Eastern wisdom and having experiences, direct experiences of higher states of consciousness. Our gurus at the time were Timothy Leary and Richard Alpert, who later became Ram Dass. And they wrote the book called The Psychedelic Experience. And so I was reading all of these books, including that one, and the Buddhist scriptures, and I was reading Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda. I was reading The Way of Zen by Alan Watts and other books by Alan Watts. And in Alan Watts' books, it said that you need to find a, quote-unquote, meditation guide. Well, in 1966, in Berkeley, California, you didn't exactly go to the yellow pages and look up meditation guide or anything remotely similar to that.
Couldn't go on Amazon either.
No, absolutely yeah. not. So I asked my roommate, well, how do I find this meditation guide? And he said, well, have you ever tried to meditate on your own? I said, okay, I'll give it a shot. Why not? So I lay down on my bed. That's how clueless I was. I didn't even know you're supposed to sit up when you meditate.
So that's rule number one.
Yeah.
You have to be sitting up.
You don't have to, but it's, you know, it's better if you're okay. sitting up. So I lay on my bed and I sort of prayed for or asked for a meditation. And immediately I was propelled into this ecstatic state. I could feel this cord or rush of energy rushing from the tips of my toes all the way to the top of my head. And I felt like I was plugged into this electric socket, cosmic electric socket of the universe, but in a most ecstatic way. And so I figured, well, I guess this is meditation. little did I know that not only had I had my first meditation experience, but also my Kundalini awakening all at the same time.
What is that? For those of us who aren't familiar with that term. Not me, of course. I mean, everybody else.
Right.
It's me.
Yeah. So Kundalini is simply a cosmic energy that flows through your body. And when it's awakened, you awaken a certain spiritual gifts, clairvoyance, clairaudience, clairsentience, and also you awaken higher consciousness.
Oh, okay. So that was your first time that that happened?
Yes, and the first time I ever meditated.
And does that happen every time that one meditates? Is it rare that it...
It's a very rare experience to have a Kundalini awakening. Yes, it's very rare. So in any case, it was not too long after that that a friend took me to the Transcendental Meditation Center in Berkeley, California. And I saw the picture of the guru hanging on the wall, and that guru was Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. This was before the Beatles learned TM or knew anything about TM. It was in 1966. So immediately I knew that this was where I could find the meditation guide. This was where I could really learn how to meditate. I could experience real meditation and not... And without drugs, obviously. Mm-hmm. So I signed up to learn. I had to wait 9 months to learn because there was no TM teacher there at all.
Wow.
So I had to wait quite a long time. But eventually, in the summer of love, August 1967, I learned Transcendental Meditation.
Dang. So you had to wait 9 months, and it was well worth the wait?
It was, yes. I had immediately, I had amazing experiences of TM. I was so impressed with it that I became a TM walking advertisement. I was bugging all my friends, and you know,
really?
it was like, shut up, Susan. We've heard enough already about this TM stuff. So yeah,
did you end up showing them? So then, were you able to instruct them on how to go about that? Or
no, actually, I was not a TM teacher at the time, but I did. Few years after that, I went to India and became a Transcendental Meditation teacher. I studied in Rishikesh, India, the same place where the Beatles studied, with Maharishi.
Wow, that's cool.
And I stayed there 6 months. That was 1969, 1970. And I was with Maharishi on the course for 3 months. And then I stayed another 3 months. There was only five other people, me and Maharishi, for 3 months.
Wow. What kind of individuals? So you got to know him then?
Very
Is
much
that,
so. That okay. was not the only time I was with him. I actually ended up being on his personal staff for 6 years.
Wow.
And I stayed in his ashrams for a total of 22 years.
Wow. That is incredible. And I imagine that not many people get to go through with this or get to experience studying and being on his staff.
No, it was very rare. Very rare.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's incredible.
I was a very rare insider in the inner circle.
That is really cool. Mm-hmm. It's mind-blowing is really what it is. You got Susan Shumsky here, Maharishi and me, seeking enlightenment with the Beatles guru, which, so he influenced you and he influenced them heavily.
Absolutely.
So who was the Maharishi?
Okay, well, he was a guru from India.
Uh-huh.
And when he first arrived on the shores of America in 1959, there was no meditation, there was no mantra, there was no yoga. These concepts did not exist in the West. You're too young to know that, but, you know,
because now yoga's everywhere. Yoga's everywhere now.
Exactly. I remember when there was two esoteric bookstores in the entire country of the United States. Now, you know, we have the internet,
mm-hmm.
and we have esoteric books in every bookstore everywhere. And it's a different world now. So within 10 years, Maharishi made those into household words. And with the help of the Beatles, because the Beatles helped to popularize Maharishi. So he was a man who had a message, had a mission, and he accomplished his mission.
And he just passed away recently, didn't he?
2008, 10 years ago.
Oh, okay. Oh, I was thinking of Ravi Shankar. He passed away a couple years ago.
Oh, okay.
I think so. But 2008, how old was the Maharishi?
He was 90 when he passed.
Wow. So he lived a long time.
He did, yeah.
Did he influence any other musicians? Did they
Absolutely.
Go over there?
Absolutely. Yeah, Donovan especially.
Okay.
Very strongly influenced Donovan. And Donovan made an entire box set with songs about Maharishi and influenced by Maharishi, and it had a picture of Maharishi on the back of the box set.
Wow.
And the Beach Boys, very much influenced okay. by Maharishi. Mike Love stayed very devoted to Maharishi until today, very, very devoted, and came to the courses that we used to hold in Europe. The Maharishi taught teacher training there, and Mike Love and Al Jardine came to the courses.
Wow.
Also, the Doors, Robbie Krieger, and actually three of the Doors, all the Doors except for Jim Morrison, learned transcendental meditation.
Wow.
In fact, the reason why they got together was because they met each other at a transcendental meditation lecture.
Wow. So that
in
is
Los Angeles.
That's amazing that the Doors happened because
of TM. Yes. Yeah. Very much influenced. Also, Mick Jagger. He learned transcendental meditation. Actually, in the back of my book, Maharishi and Me, there's a list of 250 superstar celebrities who learned transcendental meditation.
That's incredible. That is incredible. We'll read through that list, and we got more with Susan Chomsky right after this. Don't go anywhere. This is The Beatles at the Beach, and we're going to be talking to her until noon today. So don't go anywhere. It's going to be a lot of fun, people. This is The Beatles at the Beach. Well, we got Susan Chomsky here, author of Maharishi and Me, Seeking Enlightenment with the Beatles Guru, facebook.com/TheBeatlesAtTheBeach, and on Instagram @TheBeatlesAtTheBeach. She's going to be down at the San Diego Beatles Fair. If you guys want to hear her talk and do a lecture out there, and it is the 30th and 31st, so that would be Friday and Saturday. A week from today would be the second day of it. You're going to be down there both days?
I'm going to be there on Saturday.
Okay.
And I'll be on a panel. I'm also going to do a fantastic PowerPoint presentation with storytelling that has all these rare photos of the Beatles.
Very
and
nice.
Maharishi and all that. And I'm going to be telling all the stories about the Beatles and Maharishi. So it's going to be a lot of fun and obviously a lot of music at the fair.
Absolutely. That is
and
going to be
vendors.
A lot of fun.
Yeah.
And it's in San Diego.
It's in San Diego.
One of the most gorgeous cities in the States.
Absolutely.
It's beautiful. You got the water down there. You got all the good mm-hmm. food. So go down there if you guys are in the area. And can you get tickets for it on SanDiegoBeatlesFair.com? So go on there. Go grab it and go down on Saturday. You can hear more. I wanted to talk to you about why the Beatles ended up going to India in the first place and then
yeah.
why they left
okay,
as well.
Okay.
So why did they go over there?
All right. So February 1967, that's when Patty Boyd saw an ad in the London Times, a little classified ad for transcendental meditation. She went with her girlfriend and was very favorably impressed with the lecture, and they learned TM in February of 1967. Mm. So she told George about it, her husband, George Harrison, and he said, well, I want my own mantra. So then they found out that Maharishi was going to be at the London Hilton August 24th, 1967. He was going to appear there. So George got tickets for all the Beatles, and he got tickets for the Beatles' girlfriends, and also for Alexis Mardis, and for Mike McGreer, who is Paul McCartney's brother. And so they all trooped over to the London Hilton, and they were very favorably impressed with Maharishi, and they met him afterwards backstage.
Because they're the Beatles, right?
Yes.
That's how they're able to get back there?
Yes.
I imagine most people couldn't say, can I go meet the Maharishi?
But well, maybe they could have.
Maybe.
But actually, the reason they met him was because the leader, the transcendental meditation leader of Great Britain, introduced him to the Beatles. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to tell a little tale, a little story. Actually, it's not a tale; it's a true story. I'm going to backtrack a bit. There's a gentleman named Jeffrey Baker. And I knew him because he was a fellow TM teacher. And he used to drive Maharishi around in the car. And they were driving around England. And all of a sudden, Maharishi said to Jeffrey Baker, this was a way back, 1967, before the Beatles even knew who Maharishi was or anything. Maharishi, sitting in the car with Jeffrey, suddenly he said, "How many are the Beatles?" And Jeffrey said, "Maharishi, you know about the Beatles?" Maharishi said, "How many are the Beatles?" And Jeffrey said, "Well, I'm not quite sure. I think there are four of them. You know, I'm not really very connected to Beatlemania or anything, but I think there are four." So Maharishi said, "Well, prepare four of my books, The Science of Being and Art of Living, and give them to the Beatles."
That is cool.
And Jeffrey said, "Well, you know, okay, I'll try, Maharishi." Uh-huh. And he couldn't imagine how he could ever possibly get to the Beatles to give them the Maharishi's book.
I imagine it'd be a little tough.
So that subject was dropped, but it was not too long after that that the Beatles appeared at the lecture in London. And so they met Maharishi backstage, and they said, "Maharishi, we really are interested in having spiritual experiences. We tried LSD, we tried drugs, and that didn't really work for us.
Okay.
But we really want to have these experiences." And George expressed to Maharishi, I want my own mantra, you know. He was focused on, "I want my mantra." So Maharishi said, "Yeah, well, come up teaching a class starting tomorrow." August 25th, he was teaching a class in Bangor, North Wales, a 10-day meditation retreat.
Okay.
He said, "Come and take the retreat." So he invited them, and they all came. They all got on the train. They never take public transportation. The Beatles didn't travel that way. But they actually got on the train. They went with Maharishi and traveled with him by public transportation to go up to Bangor, North Wales. When they arrived late, barely in time to get on the train, and John Lennon rushed ahead, left all the luggage for Cynthia to take care of.
Nice guy.
And he was a great husband.
Yeah.
So she was left in tears on the platform. She missed the train.
No.
So Neil Aspinall had to actually drive her up to North Wales so that she could take the course. So they got up there, and they stayed in dorms, college dorms, at a normal college there.
Wow.
And they ate the canteen food, but they didn't really like that very much, so they went out to Chinese dinner.
Okay.
And after they finished eating, they realized that they didn't have any money to pay the bill because they never carry money. The Beatles always had a handler to take care of them, but there they were by themselves, and they didn't have any money to pay the bill.
I imagine if you're the Beatles, you could probably get away with not paying, right?
Not really, not at a Chinese restaurant.
Oh, okay.
So all of a sudden, George Harrison put his boot up on the table and took off his boot, and there was a 20-pound note, and he kept it for emergencies. So he paid the bill. In any case, they learned transcendental meditation the next day from Maharishi. And there's a lot of photos of the Beatles where Maharishi is signing The Science of Being and Art of Living, the book, and giving it, you know, to the Beatles.
That's
and
cool.
They're carrying the books around with them. There's pictures of them with the book. So that's the end. You know, that's how that story concluded. So in any case, they were expected to stay there for 10 days, but they only stayed 2 days because on August 27th of 1967, you know what happened, right? What happened was that Brian Epstein died suddenly of an overdose. So they had to rush back to England, to London, and unfortunately, their meditation retreat was cut short, but at least they learned transcendental meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So they were all very enthusiastic about it. And they were talking about it in the press and really defending it a lot in the press because people were very skeptical about meditation. And they were talking on the Robert Frost program and other programs in Great Britain. And they were really praising it. And John Lennon told the other Beatles, well, I think we should go on tour and, quote unquote, turn people on to meditation. So that didn't really happen, but still they were talking about it positively. And then Maharishi invited them to come to India, to Rishikesh, India, where he was going to be teaching a teacher training course starting January 1968. So the Beatles went, and they studied with Maharishi in India.
Wow. So that's how it all started, with Maharishi first asking, how many are Beatles?
Exactly.
I would have thought it would have been the other way around almost, because they would have known of him before he knew of them. But I guess it's strange how things work out like that, huh?
It is strange.
There were
a lot of strange things that happened around Maharishi.
So they go to India. Maybe we'll get into those. If you can tell any of those tales.
Sure.
So they go to India for the 10 days. Mm-hmm. And
they only stayed for 2 days because Brian died and
had to leave. That was okay. But then when they go back.
You're talking about India now.
Yeah.
Okay, so India. India is different than Bangor, North Wales. When they got to India, which was February of 1968, Ringo stayed for a couple weeks, Paul stayed for a month. And John and George stayed for 2 months.
Because when you think of George was the one that really took hold of Maharishi. Like, he was really grasped this whole, you could tell throughout his music, throughout, even in his later years. And the other three took to it, but not as closely.
They went along with George, really. They went along with George. But John was also very keen into it. In fact, when they were in India, they were competing as to who could meditate the longest.
No way.
Yeah, because they were told that they, at some point during the course, they were told they could go into their rooms and just keep meditating.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would have a competition. And at dinner, they say, you know, how many hours did you do? How many hours?
Uh-huh.
You know, and they were competing.
Won? Do you know who won? Is there any record of who won?
I think that Patty won.
Really?
Pretty
no
sure.
No way.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Like, there's always friendly competition, even in meditation.
I guess.
Susan Shumsky here, Maharishi and Me, Seeking Enlightenment with the Beatles Guru. You wrote this along with 14 books in total.
Exactly.
She's going to be at the San Diego Beatles Fair next weekend on Saturday the 31st. San Diego, California, that is. There's only one San Diego that I know of. So if you're in the area, go down there. We're talking about the Beatles' trip to India, why they went there, when they went there. And also, so they stayed, as you said, George and John stayed the longest.
They did.
But then they ended up leaving.
They did.
You said this is a long tale of why they left. We got 5 minutes before we take our second break. So do you want to start this before the break or after the break?
Well,
is it told in one block?
No, I can give a preview.
Okay.
And that is that there were three basic reasons why the Beatles left India. One of them had to do with a film deal that went south. And it was a film deal that they were trying to make with Maharishi. The Apple Corps was trying to make with Maharishi. And Neil Aspinall was involved with that. And then the second reason had to do with apparently a pass that Maharishi had made at one of the female course participants.
Oh.
A course participant that Alexis Martis was having an affair with.
Oh.
And then the third reason had to, and I'll tell your listeners who Alexis Martis is if they don't already know. And then the third reason didn't come out until 2006. And that reason had to do with the very distinct possibility and probability that was Maharishi who asked the Beatles to leave. And
really?
Not the Beatles, but the Beatles left in a huff. In either case, the Beatles left in a huff.
Wow.
And so
40 years later, that story comes out.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But while the Beatles were there in India, it was one of their most creative periods, according to many historians, Beatles historians.
Mm-hmm.
And they really, John said he wrote, quote unquote, hundreds of songs. And Paul, when they first arrived, Paul started writing songs very quickly. After arriving, but George said to him, "What the F are you doing? We're not here to write songs. We're here to meditate."
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he got all huffy about it. And Paul said, well, excuse me for living, you know. This is a quote from Paul's book.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they were very creative. And then, funnily enough, it was not too long after that that George started having mini rock concerts on the roof of the lecture hall. He brought an organ up there and started doing these little rock concerts for the 20-somethings while they were at the course.
That must have been a treat. Can you imagine
being
there?
It was a treat for the youngsters. Yeah. The older people who were there were nothing but pissed off, though, because they came there to meditate, and there was a lot of noisy music going on, and they couldn't, you know, they were trying to just have a quiet, silent meditation retreat.
But I imagine it's the Beatles. You should get over it, I would think.
The people that were there, they really didn't like having the Beatles there. They weren't interested in the Beatles. They weren't 20-somethings. They weren't teenagers. They were elderly people, a lot of them. And so, you know, the Beatles, they weren't too thrilled about the Beatles being, first of all, taking up a lot of Maharishi's time, because Maharishi gave them a lot of private time.
Was that common or no? To get that? Or
no,
did they do that because they were the Beatles?
No, it was absolutely not common. Maharishi definitely placed a lot of attention on the Beatles. He gave them a lot of private tutoring. He also did that with Mia Farrow and any celebrity.
Okay.
He was definitely favored celebrities, let's put it that way.
Okay.
Very much so.
So this is going to be an interesting talk after the break. I want to hear more about these 3 points.
Exactly.
Let's just take the break now. We'll tease that when we come back. We're going to hear why the Beatles left India. We're going to dig deep into those 3 points. And it's going to be a lot of fun. Facebook.com/TheBeatlesAtTheBeach and on Instagram @TheBeatlesAtTheBeach. Susan Chomsky, Maharishi, and me, seeking enlightenment with the Beatles guru. She's here. She's going to be at the San Diego Beatles Fair on the 31st of March. That's next Saturday, 7 days from today. You can go get tickets on sandiegosbeatlesfair.com. More with her when we come back. This is The Beatles at the Beach. We got Susan Chomsky here with us, the author of Maharishi and Me, Seeking Enlightenment with the Beatles Guru. Sammy the Late here for you, Facebook.com/TheBeatlesAtTheBeach and on Instagram @TheBeatlesAtTheBeach. You will be able to go on the Facebook page and hear the whole interview on there. When it's all said and done, I'll put it up as a video on there for us to enjoy, along with a picture. We'll get a picture too. But we were talking about before the break why the Beatles left India. And she said there's 3 reasons why, and now we're going to hear all 3 reasons in depth. So let's start at the top. Number one.
Number one reason the Beatles left India had to do with a film deal.
Okay.
So Maharishi promised the Beatles that he would give exclusive rights for the Beatles to film him and the ashram, and to do a film on transcendental meditation and on Maharishi's guru that he called Gurudev.
Okay.
And so he gave them permission to do that, and he gave exclusive rights. And Neil Aspinall and Dennis O'Dell came to India to discuss that and to negotiate a contract. So the only problem was that Maharishi had offered the same thing to someone else.
Oh, no.
His leader, who led the Transcendental Meditation Organization in America, his name was Charlie Lutz. And Charlie Lutz negotiated a deal with 4-Star Productions of Los Angeles and with Alan Waite to do an exclusive film of Maharishi. And in fact, Charlie Lutz arrived in India with a signed contract that gave exclusive rights to 4-Star Productions for the next 5 years.
And the one with the Beatles was a verbal contract, I take it, or?
I don't know if it was. I actually am not sure about that question. I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay.
I do know, though, that the Beatles had asked Neil to bring the film crew to India. And
really?
The film crew was getting ready to arrive in India.
Oh, at least they didn't get there and then have to turn around and go back.
Correct.
Or am I wrong? Or were they
actually
already there?
Actually, now that I think about it, I think they I'm going to look during the break. I'm going to look it up, but I think they may have been standing by in Delhi. New Delhi. But meanwhile, the film crew from Four Star Productions showed up in Rishikesh.
Dang.
And one morning, John Lennon was opened the door to his bungalow. He's standing on the threshold to his bungalow, looking outdoors, and he's bleary-eyed and bushy, you know, bedheaded.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked out, and all of a sudden there was a director there and a cameraman that yelled, "Action!"
And it wasn't for the action film that he shot.
It was for the four-star production film.
Wow. So that was that quick.
So now George and John were expected to be two-bit players in this film that they didn't even know about. This kind of back-alley deal.
I take it they didn't take too kindly to that.
They did not take too kindly to it. In fact, they refused to leave their bungalow. They would not go to the lecture hall where the cameras were set up and the lights were set up. They refused to go there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one reason they left India.
That's
probably the main reason they left India, but there are two other reasons.
All right, so that's one of three.
The second reason had to do with Alexis Mardis. In case you don't know who he was a Beatles associate. Let's just put it that way. He had been hanging out with the Beatles in 1967, I think. I'm not sure if it was before 67, but around 1967, he started hanging out with the Beatles. In fact, he had joined himself to John Lennon's hip. And Cynthia Lennon was very concerned about it. Cynthia Lennon, who is John Lennon's wife, was very concerned about Alexis Mardis' Svengali-like influence upon John. And she really didn't like him at all. And she didn't trust him. And so Alexis had impressed the Beatles with his expertise, supposed expertise, electronic expertise, and inventor. And John Lennon introduced the other Beatles to Alexis, calling him Magic Alex, my new guru.
Yeah. I remember Magic Alex.
So this is that's him, Magic Alex.
All right.
So they traveled with him. They went to Greece with him. They hung out with him a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And he claimed that he was creating all these wild inventions, like wall paint that would be a speaker where music would come from it, and some kind of something that would make people invisible, and supposedly building a UFO rocket ship, some crazy inventions.
So he was out there.
And also, he wanted to drill the Beatles' skull. Trepanation
is
a process where you drill the middle of the forehead to open the third eye, supposedly. And he wanted to do that to the Beatles.
I imagine it usually doesn't end up too well. I think there's a lot of blood loss when it comes to that, right?
All I can say is he was crazy. And later on in life, John Lennon described Magic Alex as cracked, quote unquote. He was cracked, is what John said. So anyway, Magic Alex showed up in India, in Rishikesh, and he started having an affair with this woman named Rosalind Bonas. And they were not only having an affair, Magic Alex was smuggling in alcohol, and some of the Beatles and their wives were drinking it. And smuggling, and other people were smuggling in hashish, and so that was being partaken of in the ashram.
And it's supposed to be clean, right?
Nothing like that was allowed in the ashram.
Just standard food and...
vegetarian food. They don't even allow meat in the ashram, which I'll tell you a story about Ringo with the one of the reasons he left. So in any case, Alex Martis was doing things in the ashram that weren't supposed to be done. And Alexis and his girlfriend Rosalind were spreading rumors all over the ashram that Maharishi had made a pass at her.
Oh.
Yes. This woman that was having an affair with Alexis.
Oh, boy.
That Maharishi had made a pass at her. And so the Beatles heard about it, and they got upset, and they actually debated it all night long. And Alexis was there trying to convince them that it was absolutely true and that he saw it, or he saw Maharishi hugging her in his bungalow. And by the way, Alexis told Charlie Lutz, remember Charlie Lutz, I said he was the leader of the TM organization mm-hmm. in America? Alexis actually told Charlie Lutz that the reason he came to India was to get the Beatles away from Maharishi.
Wow. And
that was his only reason for coming, and no one ever saw him meditating there.
But how did he know, like, did he... I'm like at a loss for words over this because it's like if he wasn't there when most of the when they were there originally, right?
Yes, he went to the original lecture at the Hilton.
Okay, but he wasn't in India when they first went over there.
No,
right?
Not at all. He didn't arrive until it had to be late March. The way he described who he saw there, who he didn't see there, mm-hmm. he couldn't have arrived before late March because he said he never saw Paul there.
Okay,
and he never saw Mia, and he never saw all these people. He said mm-hmm. he never saw there. So, obviously, he didn't arrive till late March, till after they had all left. Mike Love, you know, they had all left by the time he got there.
Right.
So, yeah. So, his express purpose was to get the Beatles away from Maharishi. That's what he said. So, he kept saying, he's a madman. He's a black magician. He's going to hex you. We got to get out of this ashram. We got to go right away. And so, he somehow convinced the Beatles to leave.
Interesting.
On this, in this overnight kind of debate that went on, the next morning, Alan Waite was going to be the director of the Four Star Productions film. He was with Paul Horn. They were both involved with that film, and they were in Maharishi's bungalow.
Mm-hmm.
And it was early in the morning, and John Lennon and George Harrison walked into the bungalow and said, "We want to see Maharishi," and so. They called Maharishi, and Maharishi took John and George into his private bedroom. No one knows what happened in there. No one knows. But nothing. John and George did say that they had a conversation with Maharishi, and they did report what happened. And Alexis, of course, he claimed that he was there, but he wasn't. He wasn't in that meeting.
It was only the three.
It was only Maharishi, George, and John.
So this guy, Alexis, he seems like a compulsive liar and a little crazy?
Yeah. A little kooky.
Yeah.
So, in any case, after the meeting was done, John and George walked out of the meeting and shook hands with Alan and with Paul and said, "We're leaving." And they left.
Wow. So okay. Something didn't so go something, too well between the three of them in that meeting.
Yeah. Now, I'll tell you what John and George reported.
Okay.
So what John and George said happened during the meeting was that they went in there and they said, "Maharishi, we're leaving."
Mm-hmm.
And Maharishi said, "Why?" And George said, "Well, you know, I have to go to the south of India. I'm doing a film with Ravi Shankar, the sitarist."
Mm-hmm.
And so I told you I would be leaving to do that. And Maharishi sort of tried to get him to stay. And then he asked John, "Well, why are you leaving?" And John said, "You know why." And Maharishi said, "No, I don't. Why are you leaving?" And John said, "Well, if you're so bloody cosmic, you should know."
That sounds like a very John thing to say, doesn't
it?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So that was what was reported by George and John.
Okay.
Okay.
So that's one side.
That's one side of the story.
What's the other side of the coin?
So and they left in a huff, by the way. All right. So in 2006, Deepak Chopra was very close to Maharishi. In fact, Maharishi made Deepak Chopra's career. People may not know this, but Deepak Chopra was sent all over the world by Maharishi to promote transcendental meditation.
Oh, okay.
In fact, that was the first thing that Deepak was doing, was traveling around and promoting TM and promoting Ayurvedic medicine, Indian medicine, to the masses. And Maharishi made him a best-selling author by getting his millions of meditators to buy his books.
Okay.
And
okay. So he made him, he helped out with his...
He made him famous. Okay. Maharishi made this man famous. Because the TM organization, which had millions of members, was behind him. He was a leader. In other words,
whatever
Maharishi
he said
was grooming
went.
Him. Maharishi was grooming Deepak to become the next leader of transcendental meditation. Actually,
okay.
That was what was going on.
So once the Maharishi would step down or whatever.
Yeah,
then...
that was the idea.
Okay.
The idea was that he was the golden boy and he was going to be, you know.
Was he planning on stepping down anytime soon, or was this just like a long-term plan?
This was the long-term idea. This was in the 90s that he was already quite elderly
so
at the
time.
He was
getting older. Okay.
Yes. So, So Deepak, it was in 1991. Deepak reported to the Times of India. So if you believe Deepak's story, this is the story he reported. He said that George Harrison called him and said that he wanted to have a meeting with Maharishi.
Okay.
And so Deepak arranged a meeting for George Harrison with Maharishi. And they arrived. They flew there. They flew to Vlodrop together, Vlodrop, Holland. That's where Maharishi was living at that time. In his elderly years, he was living in Holland. So they arrived there, and the meeting started, and George gave Maharishi a rose, and then there was a long silence. And then George said, "Maharishi, I came here to apologize to you."
Wow.
And Maharishi said, "For what?" And George said, "You know what for." And Maharishi said, "Well, tell Deepak the story." So as they're sitting in this meeting, apparently, George told Deepak that when they were in India, that the Beatles and people in their party were taking drugs and drinking alcohol, and that wasn't allowed, and that Maharishi got angry with them and asked them to leave.
Okay.
So that was what Deepak reported. And Deepak also reported that later on, George called Deepak and just mentioned to him that he was so glad that that it came out after all this time, because he didn't want to lie. He didn't want to continue to lie.
So people would often ask them, "Why'd you guys leave?" And they had to just...
I don't know exactly, you know. But I do know that they did make a kind of a pact that they would not disclose the reason why they left India. When they got back to London, that's what they said.
They kept it a secret.
Yeah, they kept it a secret.
Until then.
Yeah.
And then, so George just kind of wanted to get this off of his conscience, I guess?
Apparently.
Yeah. What year was this again?
In 1991 was when the meeting took place.
Okay.
And Maharishi, and then Deepak did not report it until 2006.
So it was after George passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And now only Paul and Ringo were left. Did they have anything to say about that?
I don't think
that was
noted. Ever commented on it.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what happened. When John Lennon returned to London after leaving Maharishi in a huff, Paul said, "Well, what went on there? Why did you leave?" You know, and because there was reason why Paul left. He left early because he had to get back to England because his girlfriend Jane Asher had a theatrical commitment.
Oh,
so
okay.
They left together. They came together. They left together.
Did they They didn't take it as seriously, though.
Yeah,
Paul?
He was not as into it as John. John and George were the really diehard ones. That, you know, they were the ones that stayed for 2 months.
They were just there for support.
Well, they did. They meditated. Yeah,
yeah.
They liked it. They enjoyed it. And they had good experiences. In fact, Paul reported one of his experiences that was really a wonderful experience. He felt very light, like a feather. And, you know, it was a very nice experience that he told people about. And also Ringo had great experiences, too. But he left after 2 weeks for several reasons. And I'll get into that because that's a different subject. But we're still on the subject of why the Beatles left. So when John returned and Paul said, well, why did you leave? And John said, well, you know, he was getting off with all these women there, and we can't go following that. He's just an old lech. And so Paul said, well, but what does that, you know, who cares? You know, he never said that he was a god. He said he was a meditation teacher.
Mm-hmm. Now, was that frowned upon? Like, because you said, you know, drugs and alcohol were banned.
Yeah.
But is the other line of that was sex, drugs?
Let's get into that in a minute. Let me finish what Paul,
Paul
and George's conversation. So, so Paul said, he reported, that he thought it was really prudish of John to have that attitude about moderation.
Oh, okay.
He thought it was a bit prudish. So, but here's the reality. Maharishi claimed to be a celibate monk.
Okay.
That's
so that was what he was saying. Okay.
Yeah. The reality is he claimed to be a monk, but I personally know several women who I've known for like 30 years who Maharishi made a pass at or had full-blown sex with.
Okay. So there was a little...
there was a little... Yeah.
Gray
there was
area
a paradox.
On there. Okay.
There was a paradox that was going on. But, you know, he wasn't the only Indian guru who came to the West and had sex with women. You know, it did happen at the time. People backpedaled about it later on. George Harrison backpedaled about it. He said it never happened. He didn't think it ever really happened. In fact, he didn't really believe Alexis at first when Alexis reported it, you know, tried to convince him to leave.
Mm-hmm.
George was completely against it. He didn't really believe Alexis' story. So there's that. And there's also Mia Farrow. And you know about Mia Farrow?
I know who she is. Yeah.
Do you know that she said that Maharishi made a pass at her?
I did not know that.
Okay.
So he was maybe not the person he put out to be, or
well,
for the most part, or if he was supposed to, you know, it was it frowned upon to do that if in being who he was, or is it just...
It would be frowned upon, yes.
Okay.
Being a celibate monk and not being a celibate monk,
right,
you know. So, yeah, there's that. And he was a human being.
Yeah.
He wasn't a god.
No.
He was a human being who had an amazing energy field, who was incredibly charismatic, who was, in my opinion, an enlightened spiritual master, because I was with him for decades.
Yeah.
And I know what he was really like. And he also had this little side where there was some sexual indiscretions, and I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't begin to understand why.
But he never partook in drugs or alcohol,
no,
right?
No, nothing like
that.
He was a very strict Hindu vegetarian.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very strict Hindu vegetarian, yeah.
We got more with Susan Chomsky right after this. I got to play the legal ID before we get in trouble. So I'm going to play that. We're going to hear more about why Ringo left India right after this. Don't go anywhere.
We are 22 West Radio, the next wave of K-Beach.
22 West Radio is 22westmedia.com.
And 88.1 FM, KKJZ HD3.
Long Beach.
And Los Angeles.
All right, The Beatles at the Beach, Facebook.com/TheBeatlesAtTheBeach, and on Instagram, @TheBeatlesAtTheBeach. We got the author of Maharishi and Me, Seeking Enlightenment with the Beatles Guru. Susan's here. She drove down from just a little north to join us, and she's actually going to be at the San Diego Beatles Fair March 31st. That's this coming weekend, next weekend, and she's going to be doing a PowerPoint, lecture, panel, all the above. So if you're in the area, go down and check it out. It'll be a lot of fun. And we've been talking about why the Beatles left India. A couple of reasons came up, and they all seem valid reasons, I would say. I mean, I would agree. I mean, just from what's been stated, it just seems like those are three very good, well-documented reasons, it seems like, of why that they would leave.
Yeah. So, for example, with the film deal, once they realized that Maharishi wanted them to be in this other film, then they realized that he really had been using them for publicity all along. that even earlier in 1967 he had put out a record album that said Teacher of the Beatles and without getting their permission.
And that's
then
a no-no.
Then the other thing they did was he kept promising ABC that there would be a special on television that would feature him and the Beatles. And he kept promising ABC again and again and again. And ABC kept asking the Beatles, and the Beatles kept saying, no, we're not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And Maharishi refused to stop telling ABC.
Wow.
And in fact, what happened was Maharishi was on tour, and he was in Sweden at the time. And Paul McCartney and George Harrison and Peter Brown flew to Sweden to tell Maharishi to stop, only for that one purpose, to tell Maharishi, stop telling ABC that we're going to do a special with you. We're not going to do it.
Wow. Just so, for that reason, they went all the way
to
Sweden.
Yes, they flew all the way to Sweden just to do
that. I hope they at least got some chocolate, maybe a couple watches or something in between. Or the licorice, the salty licorice. Maybe they got all that.
No,
but
they went
all the way up there just to tell them to stop.
Exactly.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that happened. So, yeah, it was, they were pretty pissed off.
Yeah,
about
I imagine.
And then when they heard about the woman, Alexis went to get the taxis because he was in a big rush to leave.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to get them out of there as quickly as possible. But they had to wait for the taxis to come.
He
so as
didn't
they
invent
were,
like some magic taxi.
Yeah, magic taxi, the Magic Alex taxi.
Yeah.
So John Lennon, as he's waiting for the taxis to come, he wrote a song, and he called it Maharishi.
Oh.
And he said, Maharishi, what have you done? You made a fool of everyone, and on and on and on.
That song sounds familiar.
It sounds familiar. So that song actually, what happened is, and in the song, he used a lot of expletives. He used the F word. He used the C word as he was talking about Maharishi. And George Harrison got really angry at John and said, "What? You can't. Are you nuts? You
mm-hmm.
can't do a song like that." And so he changed the words. He said, you know, Sexy Sadie, what have you done? You made a fool of everyone. You broke the rules. You laid it down for all to see. Oh, one sunny day the world was waiting for a lover. She came along turned on everyone. The greatest of them all. You know, the world was waiting just for you. However big you think you are, you know, you'll get yours yet.
Wow, so. I had no idea that was about the Maharishi.
Yeah.
Until now. That my mind is blown.
Yeah, and in some of the other words, we gave her everything we own just to sit at her table, just to smile, would lighten everyone. She's the latest and the greatest of them all. She made a fool of everyone.
Wow. And he changed it to what
Sexy
would be
Sadie.
Released on the White Album as Sexy Sadie.
Exactly.
Dang. What other, were there any other songs written in rebuttal to the Maharishi or...
Oh, no, that was the only really negative one.
Okay.
Unless you could construe My Guitar Gently Weeps that way, but I don't know. I mean, George wrote the music while he was in India. He wrote the lyrics later after he got back. In fact, he said that while My Guitar Gently Weeps was inspired by the I Ching, by something he had read in the I Ching, which is it's kind of a divination book
mm-hmm.
from China.
John mentioned that in one of his songs as well.
Oh, about the I Ching?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Trying to think of the name of the song.
Yeah.
But yeah, he mentioned that as well.
Cool.
Just the name I Ching, though. He didn't go mm-hmm. into depth of it, but he
right.
did mention that
mm-hmm.
book.
Yeah. So, in any case, we were going to talk about Ringo and why he
yes.
went, right?
Right.
Okay, so Ringo. You know, the funny thing about... Here's what Maharishi said about the Beatles. I'm going to just read this. It's
all right.
A quote from my book.
Yeah.
Maharishi said, Ringo is always in meditation and goes by feeling and heart. But as for the other Beatles, too much brain is in the way. Of all the Beatles, George is the most advanced, and this is his last life. John has many more to go and must not give in to his weakness for women or it will ruin him.
Huh. That is an interesting tale.
Isn't it?
because somebody would come along and sort of, a lot of people already along.
And yeah. At the time that they went to India, what happened was after they arrived in India, it was only 2 weeks before John moved out of the room that he was staying in with Cynthia, his wife.
Mm-hmm.
He moved into another room and he spent all of his time writing to Yoko Ono and reveling in telegrams and letters that he was receiving from Yoko Ono. In fact, he admitted that he wanted to bring Yoko and Cynthia both to India.
I can't imagine that would be a good idea. I can't imagine that would be a smart thing to do.
Not really.
No.
So, unfortunately, Cynthia had wanted Rishikesh to be a second honeymoon for her.
Okay.
But it ended up being hell for her because he just turned his back on her and he just basically ignored her the entire time.
So that was basically the beginning of the end or the last
and
straw.
And then when they left India in a huff on the plane back to England, John admitted all of his infidelities to Cynthia in a drunken stupor. He got drunk on the plane, very drunk, and admitted all of his infidelities to Cynthia. And she was in shock because she thought he had been completely faithful to her their mm-hmm. entire marriage.
I would assume that would have been, like, even before that, I would have thought that would
you
be.
You would have thought.
Yeah.
No. She only found out.
Wow. Yeah. And that's a long flight. I imagine that mm-hmm. there was a lot on that list.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, but then Yoko comes along and they're together for a long time too.
Yeah.
But as the Maharishi said.
Yes. Maharishi said, John has many more to go, lifetimes. John has many more lifetimes to go and must not give in to his weakness for women or it will ruin him.
It hits it right on the nose, doesn't
it?
It hit it right on the nose.
Maharishi also predicted while they were in India, mm-hmm. he told the Beatles that if they didn't continue their meditation practice, that the band would break up.
Interesting. And what year? That was 68?
Mm-hmm.
67, 68?
68.
Not much longer they stuck together either.
They broke up in 1970.
Yeah. It's only a couple years down the line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you think that he saw those? Are they paths of their future?
Oh, yeah.
Or, okay.
I'm sure he did.
Okay. Did he predict anything else along the lines or see any futures down the line for the four of them?
I don't know of any.
Okay.
But all I know one incident that happened in 1969. So in 1969, when Maharishi was in Rishikesh, and there was just a small group of people meeting with him in his bungalow. He had a very small, this little mm-hmm. bungalow that he used to live in. And they were meeting in the meeting room, and the secretary came in and said, Maharishi, there's a telegram here. Very important telegram. And Maharishi said, who it is from? And the secretary said, it's from John Lennon. And Maharishi said, who? And she said, John Lennon, Maharishi. And Maharishi said, who? And she said, John Lennon, who was with the Beatles. And Maharishi said, who? And she said, John Lennon, he was with the Beatles when the Beatles came to see you in India. And Maharishi said, I do not know a John Lennon.
Wow. So he completely pushed them away out of his memory.
Well.
Or just John?
John, yeah.
The others, did they ever try to contact him, any of the other three?
Yes, they did, as a matter of fact, and they did contact him. Paul did. He mm-hmm. went to Holland to meet with Maharishi, had a wonderful meeting with Maharishi, mm-hmm. very, very positive. He went there with his daughter, Stella, okay. and they had a great time, and they filmed Maharishi when they were there.
Okay.
And, that was nice. That was in, I don't know. I'd have to look that up in my book, what date that was. But, and then also that meeting I told you about with mm-hmm. George.
But that was about it.
That was it, yeah.
That we know of. But he just did not want to talk to John.
No, I'm sure that there wasn't anything else, because I lived with Maharishi for 22 years.
Okay.
And they never came. The Beatles never came.
Okay.
Mike Love, there were a lot of celebrities that were there all the time, but not the Beatles.
Not the Beatles.
No.
Wow. So he didn't want to have anything to do with John Lennon after they left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, John was the one that was very bitter
mm-hmm.
angry.
Which
really angry.
Th-
But actually, there was an interview with Maharishi after the Beatles left.
Okay.
And they asked Maharishi about what the Beatles had said about him, because they said some negative things about him on the air and so on. And Maharishi said, I love them. I love them very much. And I don't know why they would say these things. I only have a great, great love for them.
Wow. There's so many webs being woven over there. That is incredible. And I'm just still blown away that, you know, this is a topic that isn't covered
no,
as much
really isn't
about
covered.
The Beatles for some reason.
I'm actually kind of surprised, as I've been doing a lot of interviews about this book. I'm actually really surprised at some really Beatles experts who really don't know this story.
Yeah, it just seems like it's kind of just, oh, they went to India.
Yeah, they went to India. That's about it.
Yeah, they did meditation with the Maharishi, and they were in India and left.
Yeah, yeah. Like, so we'll talk about the songs. But first we'll talk about Ringo, right?
Yeah.
You
want to
know why
he leave?
Okay. So I gave you the quote about Ringo, that Maharishi said, Ringo is always in meditation and goes by feeling and heart. Mm-hmm. So really, Maharishi thought Ringo was the best meditator.
Interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
And he was there the least amount of time.
Yeah. Yeah, but he was the most innocent.
Okay.
His personality, I mean, just think about Ringo and you think about the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
He just has a very sweet nature. He's a very, very innocent person.
Right.
Okay, so he went there and, you know, dragged his wife there. She didn't like it. She hated the insects. There's a lot of insects. It's in the jungle.
Okay.
The ashram is in the jungle, and there was a lot of peacocks and monkeys. Monkeys were always jumping on the roof of the bungalow where I was staying in,
mm-hmm.
and crows, loud crows, and peacocks were cawing, and tigers sometimes. But there was a lot of scorpions, centipedes, millipedes, different insects.
So if you didn't like bugs.
If you didn't like bugs, it was
not the place for you,
no.
Maybe. Okay.
So Maureen was terrified of bugs.
Okay.
In fact, at one point, one fly kept her hostage until Ringo returned, you know.
Wow.
Finally. And she demanded that he kill all the insects and dispose of all the carcasses.
But you can't do that, though, right?
Well, that's a Buddhist thing.
Okay.
You can. I think Hindus don't have a thing about killing bugs,
okay,
necessarily. But Ringo killed all the bugs anyway. So, but the ashram did have an injunction against any meat. It's not just the ashram. The entire city of Rishikesh and Haridwar, those two holy cities that are real close to each other in the foothills of the Himalayas on the Ganges River.
Okay.
They don't allow any meat to be sold, any eggs to be sold, and any anything that's not vegetarian.
Okay.
So Hindus are vegetarian, and strict Hinduism is practiced in that area, and these are holy cities. All right, so Mal Evans, who is the Beatles road manager, mm-hmm. he was there with Maharishi, you know, and he managed to get eggs for Ringo for his breakfast.
Okay.
And so Ringo ate the eggs, and then later on he found out that the staff there were trying to hide the eggshells, bury the eggshells.
Oh, okay.
And Ringo was very disillusioned by that. He said, this is a quote from Ringo, he said, can't God see that too?
The innocent one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Ringo was disillusioned about that particular incident. He enjoyed the meditation. His wife hated it. And they really missed their kids. They had very young children. You know, one of their children had just been born six months before.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they went back mainly to be with their kids.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that was the main reason.
That was the
why.
Main reason they left. But also she, you know,
she
the
didn't
bugs.
Dig it.
The bugs.
Yeah.
And also another reason, he had a very delicate stomach.
Yeah.
He had peritonitis when he was a child. And so he couldn't handle the food, and he had brought an entire suitcase of Heinz beans, cans of
no
Heinz
way.
Beans with him. An entire suitcase of Heinz beans.
Wow.
And later on, he made a joke about it because people used to talked to him about the Heinz beans, and he said, I really need to get royalties from Heinz beans.
You really should. That's a big company. Wow. So they miss their kids.
Yeah.
The food is, so the food.
He couldn't handle the food.
Yeah.
He was trying to live off the beans. And
that's not a very good way to go.
No.
Too many beans. There's the old adage. I'm not going to say it. This show is more class than that, but that old adage about beans.
Yeah.
And the bugs.
Yeah, and the bugs.
Wow. So kids, beans, and bugs.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's respectable reasons to leave, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a newborn at home. Mommy wants to be with the baby.
I think the babies were the main reason. And actually, they said the babies were the main reasons they left.
Okay. I get that.
Yeah.
I want to hear the song Sexy Sadie. We're going to play it after the break because now we got enlightened, you might say, on this song, Sexy Sadie, which is not about a woman named Sadie.
No.
And it's actually about the Maharishi.
It's about Maharishi.
We're going to take a short break. We got Susan Chomsky here, Maharishi and Me, seeking enlightenment with the Beatles guru. She's also going to be at the San Diego Beatles Fair on March 31st. Go get tickets at sandiegobeatlesfair.com. Go see all that. She's going to be doing a PowerPoint and a panel, and she's going to be talking to you guys down there. So go see her if you're in town. And when we come back, we're going to recap on Sexy Sadie again in case you missed it. Then we're going to hear Sexy Sadie from a whole new angle. This is the Beatles at the Beach. Don't go anywhere. Beatles at the Beach is back, ladies and gentlemen. Maharishi and me, seeking enlightenment. I need some coffee with the Beatles guru. We got Susan here in studio. She joined us, and she's going to be at the San Diego Beatles Fair down in San Diego, California, next Saturday, the 31st. You can go check her out down there. And we were talking about why the Beatles left India, and also the song Sexy Sadie, which I found out is not about a woman named Sadie.
Not exactly.
I don't think Sadie's a common name either, is it?
Not particularly, but Sexy Sadie works with Maharishi. Same number of syllables.
Ah, okay. So actually this song is about the Maharishi. So you tell us that little story again if you can, in case people didn't catch it the first time.
Right. Well, John Lennon and George Harrison left India in a huff, and as they were waiting for the taxis to arrive, John Lennon wrote this song that was disparaging Maharishi, in fact, calling him some terrible names, you know, using the F word and the C word and just calling him a twat and so on. So when George saw that John was writing the song, he said, "You can't say that. What are you doing?"
Was he upset that he was calling Maharishi that, or is it just saying, like, you can't do that to put that on an album and release the song?
Yeah.
Which side is it?
I don't know.
Okay.
All I know is that he got on John about it and told him, "You can't do that. You can't say that." So they changed the words to Sexy Sadie.
Sexy Sadie. Yeah. And then they released that on the White Album?
Yes.
And I'd like to hear it now that I have this whole new enlightenment on this song. So
all right.
We're going to play Sexy Sadie for you. Then we're going to come back and hear a story about another song you might not know about called The Continuing Story of Bungalow Bill, which I haven't played that song in a while. So it'll be good to refresh on that.
Okay.
So we got Susan here in studio, Maharishi and Me. Find the book on Amazon, right?
Anywhere.
All right. Go find it.
Stores, Walmart, Target.
Okay.
Barnes & Noble.
Everywhere. All right. Here you go. Here's Sexy Sadie. Maharishi. Sexy Sadie. There you go. Right here at the Beatles at the Beach. Such a great track.
It's a great song, yeah.
And now that you know the background to it, it adds another side to
another
the...
Another meaning, layer of meaning.
Wow. Yeah. That is unbelievable. I mean, that, like we said, this is an era that maybe isn't as talked about what probably should be. But we're gonna do another song. It's called The Continuing Story of Bungalow Bill, also off of the White Album. And there's a story behind this one as well.
There certainly is. There was a woman there named Nancy Jackson, who later was known as Nancy Cook de Herrera. And she was one of the course participants there, learning to be a transcendental meditation teacher. And her son, Rick, came to join her, to visit her while she was on the course. And they went on a safari together.
Okay.
And it wasn't like the safaris that people go on now, where you go and you look at animals. It was mm-hmm. a safari where you go and kill animals.
Oh.
So they went on a hunting safari, and they rode out on elephants. And the elephants herded the tigers into the kill zone.
Interesting.
And they were up on a platform called a Machan, I think it's called. And Nancy spied the tiger, and her son Rick shot the tiger. And then they came back to tell Maharishi about their exploits. So they went to Maharishi's meeting room, and several of the Beatles and company were there. John was there, and Patty was there, and some other people. And they were talking about their tiger hunt. And I don't know what they expected Maharishi would say about hunting tigers, since he is a vegetarian Hindu yogi.
I can't imagine he took that too well.
Not very well. So he was glaring at Rick as mm-hmm. Rick was telling him the story. And Rick said it's the only time he ever saw Maharishi angry. And Rick said something like, what is this just a part of nature or whatever? And then John suddenly said, well, isn't it slightly life-destructive? And Maharishi said, yes, it's life-destructive. And he was very angry at them. And then later on, John reported that the song was about a kid who went out to shoot some tigers and then come back to the ashram to realize God. Something like that.
Wow. Wow. So this song's about tiger hunting.
It is.
I can't imagine why they would think that would have been a good idea. Can't have drugs. Can't have alcohol.
Yeah, no.
What makes you think you can go out and kill a tiger?
Exactly.
I don't think that'd be a smart idea. Yeah. So is there any other nuggets on this song to
add? Yeah. Nancy, you know, she was trying to defend herself about it. And she said, well, John, when John said it's life destructive, Nancy said, well, it was either the tiger or us, which is absolutely not true.
If you're going out on a hunting safari, I don't, where you have elephants herding
yes.
in the tigers for you to kill,
yeah,
I don't think it's a matter of life and death.
Yeah. And John, I'm going to just do the actual quote that John said. He said, quote unquote, when he talked about the song, the continuing story of Bungalow Bill, John described it as, quote, written about a guy in Maharishi's meditation camp who took a short break to shoot a few poor tigers and then come back to commune with God.
All right. Well, John really laid it out for you on that one right there. Wow. That just doesn't seem like a smart idea to go out there and go shoot tigers.
Not really.
I mean, especially when you're out there for meditation purposes.
Exactly.
Wow, so this song is about shooting tigers, and we're going to hear that, and then we'll
go. And it actually describes Rick very well. He's the all-American, bullet-headed Saxon mother's son. He looked like this Ivy League kid, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Totally dressed the part and everything. He looked like he was from some Ivy League college.
Wow. That's crazy, though. Just go out and shoot some tigers, I guess.
Exactly.
All right. Let's hear the song. Now you got a whole new side of this one as well. This is The Beatles at the Beach. We're with Susan Shumsky here, Maharishi and me, seeking enlightenment with the Beatles guru. She knew him for how long, Maharishi?
I was with Maharishi for 22 years, and I was on his personal staff for 6 of those years.
That's amazing. That's amazing. We have somebody in studio that got to know this man. And you never met any of the Beatles, though, right?
Didn't meet the Beatles,
okay.
No. I would have if they had accepted me on that course. I applied for that course. I applied for several courses before I was accepted.
Okay.
I kept getting rejected because I was too young.
Really?
They did not let younger kids go.
Okay.
You had to be like 24 and graduated college in order to go to India. So, but when I was finally accepted, they did allow allowed all the younger kids to go. They changed their mind and allowed younger kids to go. And that
okay.
was 1969. 1970 was when my course was, 1970 from January to April.
Okay, so four months. But you stayed for a while.
Yeah.
Okay.
I stayed for another 3 months, yeah. I was there till June.
Okay. We'll get more about your time in India, and then I have some off-the-cuff questions I want to ask you about some music.
Sure.
We'll do that. We're going to hear the continuing story of Bungalow Bill, take a short break. More with Susan when we come back right here at the Beatles at the Beach. And the Beatles at the Beach, Sammy the Blade here for you. And we have Susan Chomsky here, Maharishi and Maharishi and me. I'm hungry and thirsty. Seeking enlightenment with the Beatles guru. I'll get it right one of these days. But she's going to be at the Beatles Fair down in San Diego next Saturday on the 31st. So go check that out if you're in the area. You can get the tickets there. You can find her book and, as I found out, audiobook as well. On Amazon, which I'm doing an audiobook right now, and I am just wowed by it. They are amazing. I'm going to do more of them.
Yeah.
I'm going to do more of them. So you can get her book on audiobook. She's an author of 14 total books. And I wanted to ask you a couple off-the-cuff questions.
Yeah.
They're just random questions that I like asking guests.
Oh, okay.
Just because.
Let's go.
They're just fun to do. So if you can meet any one musician from any point in history, dead or alive, male or female, for lunch, who would it be, and where would you two go? And the meal is completely comped. It's free of charge. So if you want to go to the most expensive place, you want to go to a little hole-in-the-wall place, it's up to you.
I guess I would want to go with George Harrison.
George Harrison?
Yeah, because he's my favorite. He was always my favorite Beatle.
Mm-hmm.
And also, he's the most spiritual Beatle as far as somebody who's really a spiritual seeker, let's put it that way.
That's true.
And so I would like to go with George, and maybe we would go to an Indian restaurant. Why not?
Why not?
Let's go to the most expensive restaurant, Indian restaurant in London.
Okay. There you go. That's a good... Those things come full circle.
Exactly.
All right. If you could bring back any one musician back from the dead, who would it be?
Jim Morrison, of course.
Jim Morrison. Okay. Not George Harrison.
Well, he's already back from the dead because I'm having lunch with him.
That's true. So you might as well get two for one right
there.
Exactly. All right. Why Jim Morrison?
Because he was like a legend who died so young, you mm-hmm. know?
27.
There he was, yeah. Gone.
Okay. Yeah. So you've been selected to go to Mars to start a new colony. What unlimited supply of one food are you bringing? And what one Beatles album are you bringing with you?
Well, I got to bring the White Album with me, I guess.
Okay.
And food.
Mm-hmm.
It
doesn't spoil. It stays good forever.
I guess I'd have to bring spinach.
Ah, there you go.
Or broccoli.
There you go. That would work.
I'm a vegetarian.
Okay. But that spinach is good.
Yeah.
Spinach is great. Lennon or McCartney?
McCartney.
McCartney?
Mm-hmm.
Why McCartney?
Sweet, sweet, sweet. I love his voice. I love just Mother Mary's, what's that song about? Let It Be.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Yeah, McCartney.
Okay. And if you had a time machine to go back in time to see any one artist performing in their prime, who would it be?
I saw all of them.
Yeah.
I was there. I lived the whole... I was in Haight-Ashbury. I went to the Avalon Ballmore, Avalon and Fillmore. I saw them all. I saw Joplin. I saw Hendrix. The Cream. The Who. I saw them all.
I'm jealous. I'm jealous.
Santana used to... he would come to the People's Park in Berkeley on the weekends and play for free. Santana. Free concerts almost every weekend. It seems to me, I recall, they were there on many weekends, maybe every weekend.
Wow.
I went to see them all the time.
So if you could see one again in their prime, who would it be?
Probably Santana.
Santana? Okay. I personally, like, I wouldn't see the Beatles perform live because you couldn't hear anything.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd rather go back in time and see them in the studio, which yeah. I think would be cool.
That would be very cool.
But seeing them live, just, I don't know. Like, there's those live albums that have been released, and mm-hmm. I have one on vinyl. It's just, you can't hear it. You have the screaming
just
girls.
Screaming girls.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why they stopped doing it, too.
Yeah.
That and their music isn't
exactly.
too complicated.
Well, that was the reason that they stopped doing it. It was because of the screaming. And I guess also Hendrix. I would like to see Hendrix live again.
That's what was that experience like, seeing him live?
They were all amazing. Mm-hmm. I actually, Janis Joplin was, I think, my favorite.
That voice. Mm-hmm. That voice. She is another one that died too young.
Very young, yeah.
Yeah. That's incredible. You need a podcast or something telling about these kind of stories. That'd be incredible. I mean, that would be awesome to hear these stories, seeing these.
If I knew them personally, maybe, but yeah. I just saw that. I was just one of those hippies.
Yeah.
In the audience.
Yeah.
That was dancing and being crazy and dressing wild.
Uh-huh.
I was a wild hippie. I was absolutely the wildest hippie. I completely embraced the hippie lifestyle.
That's awesome. That is awesome. And you also embraced the writer's lifestyle as well. 14 books in total. What's the span of them? Like, how long have
you been
writing?
Actually, I started writing very late in my life. I only started writing books in, like, 1990s when I started writing my first book.
Okay. What was your first book?
It's called Divine Revelation.
Okay. And what does that go over?
It's a self-help book. It's about learning how to listen to the still small voice within, learning how to be in contact with the divine presence within you, your higher self, whatever you want to call it. And learning how to have two-way conversations with your higher self, being able to have develop your intuition and ask questions, receive inner guidance, and be able to make wise decisions peacefully because you know that you're making the right decision.
Okay.
When you listen to your inner voice.
All right. Is this your first Beatles-related book?
This is my only Beatles-related book. Maharishi and Me, yes.
Is there another one in the works in the future, you think?
Not about the Beatles, I don't think.
Okay. So there's no extended...
This is really the story about the Beatles with Maharishi, and I don't know that I would... You know, I'm not a Beatles expert. Maharishi expert.
Okay.
I'm a Beatles in India expert.
Hey, that's...
Definitely. That I have researched thoroughly.
Well, that's something that more people need to know
You need
about.
To know about.
There's your next project right there. There's your next project. And we did hear a couple songs, and the Spanish-style guitar, the flamingo kind of guitar that was in Bungalow Bill in the beginning that we heard before the break. I'm looking it up on Beatles Bible. The guitar was one of a number of 7-second instrument samples included on the Mellotron Mark II on that track. The identity of the guitarist is said to have been Eric Cook, an Australian sessions musician, although it is unconfirmed. Doesn't sound like George Harrison.
No, it doesn't sound like
all.
George Harrison.
So I imagine that it was a sessions musician. I don't know if it's Eric Cook. According to BeatlesBible.com, this is one of the go-to sources of info for anything Beatles.
Yeah.
Eric Cook, maybe or maybe not, but I love that intro. It's a random intro.
It was very random.
On there.
Wasn't it random?
And then,
boom,
it hits into the lyrics.
Strange,
But who would have thought that was really about a real story, about a real event that happened?
Exactly.
I didn't know that.
So is, George, so is Get Back.
Yeah. That's true. And what is Get Back about?
Okay. Terry Gustafson. He was a TM teacher in Berkeley. So obviously I knew him because I lived in Berkeley. And he went to India. He was there with the Beatles. And he was a forest ranger. He was from the Sequoia National Park. And he always dressed quite conservatively, wearing his khakis and his conservative outfits. And as he was meeting up with John Lennon, he came across John Lennon, went outside the lecture hall, and Terry was very conservatively dressed, and John was wearing what Terry described as flowing paisley cape, an Indian shirt, red sash, white bell-bottom pants, and green Egyptian slippers with curled-up toes. And I think Terry exaggerated a little bit. He said that John Lennon's hair was dyed 5 different colors and that he was wearing strobe lights eyeglasses that were flashing on and off.
Interesting outfits, I tell you that.
Yeah. So John said to Terry, look at you, look at me. One of us don't belong here. Get back to the forest. Get back to Tucson, Arizona. Get back where you belong. And after that, every time John and Terry would see each other, John would exclaim, get back, you know, whenever their paths crossed in the ashram.
Mm-hmm.
So that was how the song Get Back
interesting
came to be, even though it was written by Paul.
Yeah, that's still interesting, though. That's
but
crazy.
That's the germ of that song, and you're not going to find that anywhere else.
No, you can't. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome. So we learned about Bungalow Bill, we learned about Sexy Sadie, and Get Back. I'll never look at those songs or hear those songs the same again.
Exactly.
That's why we bring you on here.
Exactly.
So Susan's going to be at the San Diego Beatles Fair March 31st. You're going to be doing a PowerPoint. You're going to be doing a panel. So if you really want to learn a lot about who she is, all the work that she's put in, go down to San Diego. You can get tickets on SanDiegoBeatlesFair.com. And her book, an audio book as well, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever they sell books.
Exactly.
Basically, Amazon is your big go-to now for
it is.
Media.
Yeah.
But the audio books, people, I'm telling you what, if you've never done one, start with this one.
Yeah.
It's a good way to go.
Yeah, Amazon's a good place to get the audio book
mm-hmm.
for Maharishi and me.
Perfect. So music has always been a big part of your life then? Too, right?
Yeah, I was a Beatlemaniac when I was 16 years old.
Did you have a favorite album growing up of theirs? Like,
collected all their albums. I love them.
Do you still have all those?
Or is that's a sore spot.
Oh.
My mother threw them out.
No.
Threw them all out.
Oh, no.
Mm.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Mm. But, so was there a favorite song you had back growing up of theirs? Like one that really just was like, that was your song. Like, you know, you have strong connections with different songs. And
for some reason, the album Rubber Soul comes to my mind, but I don't even know what songs were on that.
A lot of good ones, I tell you that. A lot of good ones. Rubber Soul's fantastic. I mean, that's before Pepper. And a lot of great albums or a lot of great music. But it seemed like everything they put out was fantastic.
I just love the Beatles. What
yeah.
can I say?
Yeah, that's why we're here. That's why they're still relevant.
Exactly.
Today, the things that they did. Is there one? We only got about 8 minutes left. Is there one piece of information from when you were in India that really opened your eyes? Or one instance, one thing that really happened between you and the Maharishi that really made you?
Okay, this is not from when I was in India, but when I was on staff.
Okay.
So Maharishi, you know, he would walk. Anytime he'd go anywhere, there would always be a corridor of people handing him flowers, and he would hand people flowers, and mm-hmm. flowers would be going back and forth. And he would always say to people just these little pithy comments he would say to people online as they were waiting online to see him, you know, and just greet him. And he would just come up and with some amazing statement that would change a person's life
mm-hmm.
just from what he was saying, because he was an extraordinary individual who had insight that was far beyond average people. He was truly, in my opinion, a great enlightened master. That's just what I feel about it, despite his human side, despite whatever
mm-hmm.
he did, you know, in his bedroom, or I don't care, frankly.
Yeah.
I couldn't care less what he did in his bedroom. So one day I was waiting online. It was in Arosa, Switzerland, and he was just walking through the crowds, and all of a sudden, actually, I think it was in La Antilla, Spain, it wasn't Arosa, it was in La Antilla, Spain. And he just came up to me suddenly and stopped in front of me and gave me a flower. And he said to me, don't look to anyone. When you don't look to anyone, then everyone will look to you. And I didn't really quite understand what he meant by that until much later.
Mm-hmm.
And when he actually eventually told me that I had to leave and go back to the United States. I had been living in Europe with him for 6 years, and he told me to go back, and he said, you're too dependent on me. You're much too dependent on me. I won't always be here, so you have to leave. And when he told me to do that and told me to leave, I realized that when he had said, don't look to anyone, when you don't look to anyone, then everyone will look to you. Eventually, I realized that he was talking about himself also. Don't look to me. Don't look to anyone. Don't be dependent on other people, in other words.
Okay.
So that was his message to me that made a big impression on me.
That's just really good advice.
Mm-hmm, it is. It was for me, anyway. I needed it.
So he was full of those, you almost say, Maharishi-isms?
Oh, Maharishi-isms, yeah.
Yeah.
But they were always individualized. They were just for that person.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's... And he knew exactly...
What to say.
What to say to whom.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
He was an amazing, extraordinary person.
Yeah.
When you were in his presence, you felt like you were in a timeless, spaceless place. He exuded an incredible energy and this divine love. You would feel waves of divine love and waves of divine bliss when you were around him. That's why everybody was always competing to get into the room, to be close to him. That's why the Beatles wanted to get close to him.
Mm-hmm.
Because of this energy that you felt when you were with him. You felt you were loved in this amazing way that you had never been loved before. It was divine love. It was God's love. And it was really powerful.
Wow, this was an amazingly powerful 2 hours, I tell you that. We're gonna wrap up, and I want to play Get Back since we talked about it.
Okay, good.
But aside from that, Maharishi and Me, Seeking Enlightenment with the Beatles Guru. Thank you so much for coming in, Susan. You can get the book on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble, all those good places. So anytime you want to come back, talk Beatles, talk whatever you're doing, let me know. And San Diego's Beatles Fair, Saturday, March 31st. You can get tickets. Go see her down there as well. But the interview will be up on the Facebook page. So if you missed it, you can check it out there. But thanks again, Susan. It was a pleasure. And you're welcome to the Beatle family anytime you want here at the Beatles at the Beach.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me, Sammy. And I really enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun.
I'm glad you came down, because if not, we wouldn't have been able to spend 2 whole hours on this. And this is a topic that people need to know more about. So we're going to leave you a Get Back, since we heard a little story about that as well. Maybe I could pull those stories and save them for the archive. But until then, Susan, thank you so much. Facebook.com/TheBeatlesAtTheBeach and on Instagram @TheBeatlesAtTheBeach for all the info. And Maharishi and Me, Seeking Enlightenment with the Beatles Guru. Until then, let's kick it over to Paul, and that'll be it. Susan, thank you so much again. See you next time around.
The picture, the finger's good. Okay.